Henry, the theme song.
That's all of my material.
That was great work, Henry. I'd like to welcome you all back to This Is Rocket Science, the official Columbia Space Initiative podcast. I am one of your hosts, David Tibbetts.
And I am the other host, Henry Manelski.
For those of you who are not watching the video portion of this podcast, for reasons that it doesn't exist, Henry was just playing a banjo right there. It's the first time he actually provided the theme song himself. Great job.
Thank you.
So, last episode, we left off talking about the beginning of the Apollo missions, mm-hmm. with Apollo 1 and that massive fire failure. You know, who could have guessed that pure oxygen is flammable?
Mm-hmm. You'd think the engineers would catch something like that, but they didn't.
Anyways, today, we're going to be continuing on. This whole episode is going to be dedicated to talking about the Apollo missions. Mm-hmm. This is one of Henry's favorite things. It'd be like me talking about minerals. Unfortunately, this is a space podcast, so we'll be doing Apollo today.
But there's also those rocks.
There is a lot of great geology stuff in this. Because one of the most important things about going to the moon is actually being able to see the rocks that are there in person. A lot of people trained on these actual moon-bearing missions is... moon-faring missions, not moon-bearing. they had to do trained in geology from universities and such. So they could actually know what kind of rocks you're looking at.
And they actually brought a geologist on Apollo 17. That's getting way ahead of ourselves, but...
yeah. We left off on 1.
Mm-hmm. Well, we finished talking about Apollo 1. And
which, of course, the lasting effects of that is that it was a big failure. They were worried to do another one.
Mm-hmm.
How long was it between Apollo 1 and 2?
That's something I should know off the top of my head. So we're going to click on the link to the next manned Apollo mission, which was Apollo 7. Apollo 7 was in 1968. So it was only about a year, 1967 and 1968. And they also had flights in between that were unmanned.
And those were then the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6
mm-hmm.
Apollos.
Those were all unmanned missions where they just were testing stuff. Apollo 7 was the next manned mission.
And that was because of the, you know, all the death in the first one, right?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
So then on Apollo 7, that's when they first started testing the different equipment that we would use to then get to the moon. In particular, the lunar module. That was probably the most untested part of the vehicle. I wish there was some way that we could, like, show our viewers an image of what it looked like, but you could just Google it. The command module, service module, lunar module are all attached to each other in the rocket when they're going up. Actually, two of them are split off, but whatever. The lunar module is the thing that actually lands on the moon. So it doesn't have a heat shield because there is no atmosphere on the moon. It doesn't need to go through any atmosphere. It looks super weird. And it looks super weird because engineers made it, and engineers were trying to cut down on weight primarily, and also add a lot of thermal insulation. It's like the outside of it is like chrome colored and weird looking, and there's like, it almost looks like gold foil, like, wraps around half of the thing. So yeah, they were just mainly testing that in orbit on Apollo 7, practicing docking, which was a sort of ill-tested maneuver.
It tested docking, which didn't work because, you know, rotational stuff. It's not like Interstellar at all.
Yeah, not at all.
The following Apollo mission, Apollo 8,
mm-hmm.
is the second time we send people into space. And it's significant because it's actually the first time that we make it around the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that happened around Christmas time, didn't it?
Christmas Eve of 1968, that was like a super big deal because they had like a video feed of it. People could actually watch it on their televisions.
Now, it took about 68 hours for them to make the trip.
Okay, so Apollo 8.
A 3-day journey.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's also something that to a lot of people was kind of surprising, like going to the moon. The total mission duration, 6 days. So 3 days to the moon, that's pretty good. Most people, you know, would think it would be a lot more than that. But this was sort of like a watershed moment in the Apollo program, just because from a public relations standpoint, Apollo 7 wasn't really that significant because it was like we were doing a lot of testing of like technical engineering equipment that people couldn't really relate to. But then, you know, they turn on their TVs on Christmas Eve and they're like, holy cow, people are orbiting the moon. That really inspired a lot of people, especially after Apollo 1, which resulted in the deaths of 3 astronauts. So nobody died in Apollo 8.
Great, great news. Next we go on to...
great news.
Apollo... Okay, sorry for being happy and people that don't die. You guys are horrible.
It just happened like 50 years ago. You're acting like it's like unfolding before our eyes. Like, oh, that's great news.
Sorry for being enthusiastic. Apollo 9!
Yeah, nothing really happened in that one. Like, Apollo 9 and Apollo 10, like, basically they were just dress rehearsals? That's a thing? Dress rehearsals for the actual landing on the moon. So not only did they go to the moon, they did an orbital insertion. They actually ended up in low moon orbit. And then they practiced undocking the lunar module from the command and service modules and going to the altitude that they would normally go to when they were landing on the moon. And then, like, in their correct orbit to then land on the moon. And then they just went back and docked. So it was everything but the actual landing.
Now, Henry, exactly what day did Apollo 11 occur?
Apollo 11 occurred... I can't find it on the Wikipedia page.
July 20th, 1969. Henry, this is your field of specialty. You should know at least the day of the big one.
Yeah. So...
Everyone knows this one is the big one. Mm-hmm. Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin. We land on the moon. It's pretty awesome.
Should we start getting into, like, the crazy details? Just because, you know, we might as well at this point. There's only, like, 6 of these things left. We might as well.
Yeah, let us go in.
Let's see, any interesting details about Apollo 11?
Well, it was faked.
Oh,
yeah, it's completely faked.
You want to talk to you a bit about how we can know for sure that it wasn't faked?
Sure. I know all the best reasons why it was faked, so... Here, debunk them.
Do you want to list them?
Debunk them one at a time. Hey,
let's go.
Let's just one first, okay? Just one, and then the rest directly.
Okay, flag was waving in the space pictures.
It was not.
Okay, flag was warbly waving. There's no wind in space.
Okay, it wasn't. There wasn't a video taken of it waving. It was just like crumpled. Like it was just stuck in a position where it wasn't completely flat.
Why?
Because when they put it on the moon, it was crumpled. When they put it like
the low gravity,
and it just sticks there.
It was just low gravity.
Well, I don't know. I think that if I'm Neil Armstrong and I'm putting the flag in the ground, I'm gonna go like this. And just spread it all the way for the picture. To be fair, that's not a great one.
That's all I got. Sorry.
that's all he's got. There is some other good ones. For example, the fact that you cannot see any stars in this picture. It's in space, right? You see stars.
It's because
of light. It's not a whole lot of light coming from them. As opposed to the entire sun reflecting out the surface of the moon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No. You're not gonna see any stars.
Yeah,
try catching a star with your iPhone camera. Good luck, bro.
Yeah.
Good luck. Especially in the middle of the day, which is what it is there. You see the sun shining on them.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is they say that it's not the sun, that it's studio lights. I heard a great argument against it. And this picture is the two of them standing to each other, right? Their shadows are parallel. Well, they're not actually parallel because, you know, there's not two lights shining on them right next to them. If it was a studio light... The distance between these people and the lights would have actually an effect on the angles of the shadows at that distance. The only way you get it to appear parallel is when your source of light is millions of miles away. Or, you know, when it's the sun. Pretty straightforward on that one. That's kind of my biggest one, is just the shadows.
Because mm-hmm.
you can't make that without, I don't know, having the sun.
And also, I mean... We talked about ways that we can debunk classic arguments that say that it was faked, but another way that we can just simply prove that it did happen is on Apollo 11 and on a few of the subsequent missions, they left this sort of reflecting experiment, a mirror, basically. And the thing about how, I guess, we can explain how light works, too. Whenever you look at a surface that isn't a mirror... Or when you look at the moon normally, what's happening is that a bunch of light coming from the sun then hits the surface of the moon and then what's called diffusely reflects. So it spreads out in all different directions because it's not a perfectly flat surface. It's not a perfectly reflective surface either. So the light completely scatters. Some of it reaches your eye. Not all of it does. The vast majority of it doesn't. But in a mirror, it reflects so that it bounces off at equal angles. At equal angles on each side. So if you shot a laser at a mirror, it would bounce completely back straight towards you if you were flat to it. So they have a mirror on the moon, and you can shoot a laser at it, and it will bounce back. If you shot it at somewhere where there wasn't a mirror, nothing would bounce back because it would diffusely scatter.
I just have one question for you, Henry. Who filmed the moon landing? Couldn't have been Buzz Aldrin. He was in the frame. So was the moon rover. Who filmed the moon landing?
The moon rover?
The moon lander mobile. The spaceship.
The lunar module.
The lunar module.
Footage was from inside.
Yeah, they
no, it wasn't. The iconic footage is there's a camera footage of the lunar module and of the dude.
That's
where's the camera?
That's literally a picture of them already on the ground.
There is the camera footage of him stepping off the spacecraft onto the ground. He says, one small step for man, yada, yada, yada.
That's on the spacecraft.
No, it wasn't. Look it up. Learn your knowledge. Smart your brain. Get your facts right.
He's trying to say the facts. Let him speak.
Boom. Yeah, that's
from
on
inside the rocket.
Yeah.
Fake news.
Do you remember the robot from Wallace and Gromit? You know the one that goes skiing at the end when they go to the moon?
Space rocks.
There's also a few more facts about Apollo 11. That
bring them.
Are super cool. One that some people might find interesting, in particular computer science people, a lot is made of the fact that the guidance navigation computer on the Apollo missions had, you know, memory storage capabilities on par with, I'm going to get the facts wrong, but like an MP3 player, or like way less than an MP3 player. So one of the innovations, particularly made by somebody called Draper at MIT's lab, in order to make a computer that could actually fit inside of the lunar module and actually guide the landing, is an operating system, one of the first operating systems. And one of the key innovations with this operating system was how most worked at the time, how most computers worked, is a system called time sharing. Basically, you have a bunch of tasks, and you either do them sequentially, or you do them all at the same time really, really slowly. But because they were super inefficient computers, the Apollo guidance/navigation computer actually did was it gave every single task a priority level. So something like firing the engines, guiding it to the actual surface, would be a one. It would be the highest priority. But something like updating the display for the astronauts to see would be a 10. It wouldn't really be that important. And therefore, when the computer got super overloaded, which happened on Apollo 11, it was called a 1202 alarm. Basically meant the computer had way too much to do and was freaking out. What ended up actually happening on Apollo 11 is that the computer, knowing its priorities, stopped updating the display. Who cares? You know, the computer's doing all the guidance anyway. And then it focused on what was important, which was firing the engines, actually getting them onto the ground and making sure that they don't die. So there was all these alarms going off that in real time, engineers from NASA had to sort of translate and say, oh yeah, that's fine, you can ignore that. Even though there's like blaring red lights and they were like, are we gonna die? They'd be like, oh yeah, that's a 1202 alarm, not a 1203. You should be not dead. But in the end, the guidance computer, all it did was bring it to the altitude that was on the surface, but so it didn't actually take into account craters, boulders, massive rocks that could be in the way. So what ended up happening was it was steering the spaceship right for a massive crater and a field of boulders. So Neil Armstrong had to take manual control with something like 30 seconds of fuel left to actually land it on the moon, which is really stressful.
Are there any, like, interviews with him where he recounts just the experience of, like, having to reroute the entire freaking thing?
Yeah.
Wow, that must be, like, insane.
Really terrifying.
Talk about an adrenaline rush, you know? Like.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things about the Apollo 11 documentary is that, which I didn't know, is that they took their heart rates. during all this. They had like a medical officer who's tasked with managing all of their vitals. So I forget exactly what it was, but his heart rate was something like 180 when he was actually doing this, because he was like freaking out.
Oh my god.
As one day.
Yeah, understandable.
It would be freakier if he wasn't freaking out. He was just like,
"Well, another
I have no fear of mortality."
Another thing, 48. when they were taking off, when they're lifting off of this massive rocket, they had like 70, 75. Like they were like completely steady, which I thought was kind of terrifying.
That's insane.
Yeah, I guess they're astronauts. They're sort of, they train to do that sort of thing.
Were they still using like the what was the little old lady programming by that point?
Little old lady program?
No, it was like there was a struggle with just like having like programs in space, like things that like, because early on it was like you wanted things that could like withstand high temperatures and wouldn't like get destroyed under high temperatures and just horrible conditions and stuff, that they had these they called it little old ladies or little old lady program, because they had people who were good knitters. Like, leave binary code. And since the software was the hardware, it kind of withstood. But
that's
true. You know, like, when that was used? I know, like, of it, but...
That was used during the Apollo program.
Like, all of it?
Yeah, to program the guidance computer. I forget, I'm going to mix up the details, but it was something like, if they weave, like, a string through a hole, it's a 1, and if they weave it around, it's a 0. So,
That's whack.
And even then, like, the programs were fairly complicated. So there was a lot of code that went into this. So there was, like, dozens of...
Little old lady.
Yeah.
LOL. LOL programming.
I might talk about some of the rocks that they found. Most of the rocks that they found on Apollo 11 were basalts, which are typically a pretty iron and magnesium-rich volcanic rock. A lot of basalts we see at a lot of young volcanoes, like the Hawaiian Islands are all basaltic rocks. They're more from like deeper types of volcanism. Most of our denser elements are found there, which is kind of weird to see on the moon. But they did find a couple more pieces of rock of a type called an orthosite, which is a bit lighter of a rock. It's mostly composed of a mineral called plagioclase feldspar. That doesn't mean anything to you guys. It means something to me. That's a pretty common earth-forming rock. And the identification of these as plagioclase was used to create the theory. Because these were actually crystalline. They're bigger than basaltic rocks. Basalts form in a matter of minutes. They erupt at a volcano and they cool rapidly. They mean nothing. But these plagioclases were crystalline, which suggests that there was a period of time where it took to actually crystallize from a molten source. And that kind of led to the idea that the entire body of rock that is now known as the moon was molten, or at least the surface was. They call it actually the idea of the magma ocean, that only some of it melted during the eruption, or not the eruption, the impact that caused it.
At what point in time was the moon, did the moon have active volcanoes on it, or was there some sort of magma coverage?
Okay, so we're gonna take a step back real fast about the formation of the moon. Now, of course, most of my knowledge about rocks and minerals is mostly based on the Earth, because that's where I am. But
why would you laugh at that? That was like beyond dad joke. That was
nice flex.
Those that haven't heard the theory of the formation of the moon, it's theorized that a massive planetoid. Don't know what the right word is. Another body of rock like the Earth.
It would have been a planet because it was like about the size of Mars. So like it was planet size shape.
Smashes into the Earth while we're still a young planet. Knocks off a bunch of rocks and stuff into space. A lot of it becomes molten from the impact. And that's floating around in space, orbiting the Earth. Some of it flies out. Some of it lands back on. And whatever is caught in orbit begins to accrue and conglomerate into a new molten body, which, you know, cools off into the moon. That happened 4.3, 4.2 billion years ago. Only a couple hundred million years after we actually began to form as a planet. Mm-hmm. A lot of rocks that were on the Earth do not exist before this time. You cannot find a rock on the Earth that is older than this event. because they were all destroyed. The Earth was pretty hammered from it. The theory then is that all of the solid rocks that were knocked into space that didn't melt, they, when they came together, because they were denser than the liquid molten rock, they sank to the bottom. Sort of like how on our planet, when it was molten, all the iron and dense metal sank to the bottom. And this one, just solid rocks sank to the bottom. And liquid rocks came to the top. And then as the planet was, or not the planet, the moon was forming, a lot of different, there's a thing in geology called fractional crystallization, where different temperatures, different minerals will crystallize first. So a lot of our more iron, magnesium-rich minerals will crystallize first because they have the highest boiling points. So once we get below that, then they have to be solid. A lot of like silicas and silicate minerals, they have really low boiling points, so they'll stay liquid until like the last minute. So as you go deeper into the moon, there's a lot more, it's called mafic rocks. Mafic is magnesium and iron rocks. The counterpart is felsic, which is feldspars and silicas. Like I said, finding these rocks on the surface of the moon is how you get the theory that it was all molten at some point. Something else that's interesting about the moon is its composition of the entire thing is a lot more like the composition of the surface of our planet.
The theory to the core? Like,
yeah. And we figure that out just by like the overall mass of the moon, which you can get. But
wait, so like the gravity and then seeing like density and stuff,
yeah.
It's not gonna be something weird. Okay.
It's way less dense than our planet. But it matches about the density of the surface, so like the mantle and the crust of our planet. And the reason for this is actually that whatever body of rock hit us, I don't know what the name of it is officially.
Called it Theia.
Nibiru.
They called it Theia? Theia? Whatever.
Theia. Okay.
And they're from a cosmos.
It's theorized that this Theia had to have hit us at an angle such that it only blasted off the surface part of our planet because all the lightest stuff on our planet's at the surface. Which suggests, of course, that only that layer of stuff is on the moon. Which is an interesting thing. You always think of it like being a head-on collision. If it was a head-on collision, there probably wouldn't be much planet left today, I think.
Yeah.
So when did the moon volcanoes or moon?
Oh, you want to know about moon volcanoes?
Mooncanoes.
So mooncanoes, which is not the official name. The official
it
name
is now.
They're called Maria.
Mooncanoes.
That's almost as cool, but not quite.
They're called Lunar Maria, and they're massive flows of basaltic lava. Basaltic lava, as we talked about before, just like the Hawaiian volcanoes, just like the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. It's all deep magnetism that comes to the surface.
Any relation to the basaltic sea?
What?
Baltic, never mind.
The basaltic sea?
I nagged him, don't worry. What about balsamic vinegar?
Basaltic vinegar.
No, that's the Adriatic Sea, sorry.
So many people are triggered now. All the Lithuanians.
Your massive Lithuanian fan base is up in arms.
Wait, I think I don't know if we have people from Lithuania, but we have people from, like, weird places.
Now basaltic...
Canada.
New Shout
Jersey.
Out to our one person in Denmark, Iceland, Ukraine, India, the Czech Republic. There's like a bunch of these.
Oh, that's cool.
Ooh.
You can see your
Yeah, apparently you guys like this podcast.
Poland. Thank you for tuning in.
Go Poles!
Move to America.
I can see what region they are from in Poland.
Wow, that's really well.
So you know, I should take a moment real fast.
Freaky. I can see what...
There's a lot of people listening to this podcast right now. Somehow. I don't know how. But, you know, if you're enjoying the show, and if you want to get updates, or if you want to see our memes, make sure to follow our Instagram account, at ThisIsRocketScience. If you're really, really enjoying the show, leave us a positive review on Apple Podcasts. If you like the show at all, I'd give it 5 stars anyways.
It's free.
There are so many people watching this from such weird places.
Arizona's on here.
You can see, like, the cities.
Wait,
where's
Alaska?
Zona?
Arizona's, like, the sixth one.
Chat down. We got any just
Illinois?
Number one.
From Chicago and whatever Lombard is.
Wait, what?
Lombard?
Yeah, it's a suburb.
We
got
any listeners from Alaska?
Lombard.
Oh, New Jersey. My New Jersey people. From Little Silver. That's like sort of my town, basically. No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
North Dakota.
Where in North Dakota is
Park River and St. Thomas. Hello to whoever's listening from St. Thomas, North Dakota.
For the record, if we're calling out your towns, you should go to our Instagram account at This Is Rocket Science. Leave us a comment. Be like, hey, thanks for the shout out. Anyways, back to Micah Weiss's question about moon canos.
Yeah.
I'm talking about lunar maria here. Maria, my bad. Lunar maria are massive areas of basaltic lava, like I said, like Hawaii, like, you know, the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. Basalt rocks are super dark. Most low iron rocks, which is not what basalt are, they're lighter rocks. So, when you look at the moon, this is something I can bring out to all of you right now. If you're listening at nighttime, look outside, you see the moon. There's a lot of white spots, and there's a lot of dark spots. I'm not referring to shadow, I'm referring to, like, the actual composition of it. The lunar maria are all those dark spots there. They're massive. You can see them from Earth. Can you see me right now, Micah?
No.
Nope. It's cloudy.
The sun set like 10 minutes
now, ago. The ages of these bodies of rock can range anywhere from about 4 billion years old to less than a billion years old, which is weird, you would think. It's a big range. It's way younger than the formation of the moon. So the moon was solid by the time it was forming. And you don't think of the moon as a place that has a lot of, you know, volcanology going on. There's no plate tectonics. It's solid all the way through. There's no molten core. The way these form is their bodies of rock form from impacts, actually. Massive impacts turn the things they hit completely molten.
Oh! So like comets hit the moon, boom, moon canos.
But it's more just like the surface when it hits, like deep through it.
It's like a moon bruise.
And then it comes all the way across, resolidifies as this black, dark basalt.
So have humans ever borne witness to a moon cano in full erupting glory?
It's not much like a volcano, really. A volcano implies it's a body of magma. This has never been a magma.
Okay.
It doesn't come through the moon. It's kind of more associated with, like, a type of rock we can find on the planet called a tektite. Some of you may have seen these before in, like, rock shops. Tektites are little pieces of glass that are formed from meteorite impacts where the sand is actually fused into glass from an impact. Very popular from places like Ethiopia has a bunch of them. If you go to the meteor crater in Arizona, where I'm from, you can buy a bunch of them. You can pick them up.
There's also what happened when they set off nukes in...
In Trinityite and other associated nukes as well. Same thing. Your massive eruption creates a fuse of stuff.
But if you're the one listener from St. Thomas, North Dakota,
we love you.
Like, we love you. Please email us immediately. Like, I'm pretty sure this is a glitch, so email us. Just because that's hilarious.
We will give you all of Henry's life savings.
Yes, I
know. We will give you Henry.
You can call into the podcast and ask any questions you want. Oh, right. Anyone who's gotten a regular decision into Columbia University, you just got accepted today. Good job. Proud of you.
Okay, so,
I explained the origin of the moon, the composition of the moon. We talk about Apollo 11. What follows Apollo 11, huh, Henry?
So basically nothing happens on Apollo 12. Well, the number one thing in terms of meme factor that happens on Apollo 12 is...
That's what we're concerned with.
Which is what we're concerned with. It was struck by lightning multiple times sitting on a launch pad. Which, like, you think, like, wouldn't really kind of be a big deal because it's a massive rocket, but, like, it's fully fueled, like, all these sensors were completely burned out. So they were just sitting on the pad, and they were like, did we just got struck by lightning? And they were like, yep, just ignore it.
You just made him sound like Hicks. Didn't we just got struck by the lightning?
We just
got struck by lightning. Hard to do.
Let's see if we have any viewers from, like, Mississippi.
Is that an AC/DC song?
What?
Oh, no, it's
Thunderstruck.
Apollo 13.
Oh, that's a lucky number.
If you want to hear about Apollo 13, good for you. It's a whole f***ing movie.
So a lot of wild stuff happens on Apollo 13. Where do we begin? I guess we can start by talking about what went wrong and why that was a big deal and how they fixed it. Basically, they're actually kind of unsure about what specifically caused what happened. A lot of people think it was the prevailing theory is that it was like a meteorite, like a super small one, like a micrometeorite. Basically what happened is one of the oxygen tanks on the command module ruptured, blew open a whole section of, like, if you could see it from the exterior, like, a lot of it would be completely blown up.
As they were going to the moon, or, like, what
they,
point?
So they had just finished TLI, they had burned their engines,
mm-hmm.
and were on course to go to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
They were going towards the moon, there's nothing could have changed that.
Mm-hmm.
And while, right after they had flipped the command module around and docked it to make sure everything was ready to go,
mm-hmm.
that's when it happened. So basically what they had to do is what's called a free return trajectory. Basically they were going to do a figure eight around the moon. They weren't going to burn and go into orbit because they needed to get home as soon as possible because this whole oxygen tank had ruptured, so they didn't have oxygen. A really big concern, well, they didn't have oxygen on the command module. Essentially they turned the lunar module, which was only designed to support two people for 3 days, they turned that into a lifeboat for the whole mission. So all three of the astronauts went in there, sealed the doors. And one of the problems, the big problem that they had to solve, which you can see Apollo 13 to learn about it in more detail, the issue wasn't so much that they were running out of oxygen, although they were, but it was that they had way too much carbon dioxide, which above a certain threshold, I don't know if it's like 8% or something, I think that's, I'm like recalling the movie as I'm thinking about this, above a certain threshold is deadly. It will kill you. So what they had to do was they had these carbon dioxide scrubbers, which would get rid of the carbon dioxide in the spaceship. But the lunar module didn't have enough of the like actual scrubbing material to get rid of the carbon dioxide because now they had three people and they were staying there for the whole mission. So essentially what they had to do was find a way to connect the carbon dioxide scrubbers in the command and service module with the one in the lunar module. And they were different shapes. One was a sphere and one was a cube. And they had to find a way to connect them. They didn't quite match up.
This reminds me of a distinct dilemma I had in my childhood. Square peg, round hole, you know. How'd they do it? Duct tape?
Bless you.
Yeah, they used some duct tape. They also, like, so what they...
I was joking.
Yeah, they used some duct tape. Essentially, there's a scene of this in the Apollo 13 movie. They take a bunch of engineers at NASA, and they put them in a room and just dump all of the equipment they have in the lunar module and just say, like, you have an hour, figure out something to connect these two things. And eventually they found it. Basically what they did is they used random parts from the spacesuit. They took random part from like the bag that they used to keep the flight manual in. They just ripped it open. And then they used a bunch of duct tape. And eventually they found a way to put the two together and saved all the astronauts.
Why don't they just have like a really long breath holding contest, right? So like they would just like only breathe maybe like twice a minute. Boom, net less carbon dioxide.
Well, you have to do that for a long time.
Yeah. Also, that wasn't even the only problem. Because a whole like section of the spacecraft had been like ripped open, the command module was not generating power the way that it used to. So they had to find a way to sort of lower the wattage of every single appliance that they had, turn as many things off as possible. Most notably, they had to restrict the climate controls, so it got freezing. It was like 20 degrees or something. Yeah. Just because outside of space. Space is really cold.
Space doesn't care about your feelings.
Does space smell like steak?
What?
That's a thing. That actually
Wait,
is a thing.
What?
Well, okay, so the
I
idea
know you're vegetarian, but I want to hear this.
If you go out into space and you take off your helmet and you just smell, there's nothing there. So you won't smell anything. You'll be dead.
Your nose is freezing.
Yeah,
burning.
Actually, all of like the gases will just immediately get sucked out.
So you unsniff.
You would unsniff. Yes, you couldn't sniff.
So you're smelling your organs. That's why it smells like steak.
Yeah. But the idea that it smells like steak or something like grilled is because I guess the idea is that there's a lot of like radiation that when you go on a spacewalk, sort of. A lot of this radiation will like burn the outside of your spacesuit, and then you bring your spacesuit inside and you take it off, and then all of this, like, sort of, I guess, technically irradiated outside of the spacesuit reacts with the oxygen in the air, and because it's sort of burnt, it smells like grilled meat or something.
So to the Texan listeners out there, no, you cannot actually do space barbecue.
Yeah.
It is just radiation.
It was freeze.
That'd be pretty good, pretty cool, actually.
Fun fact about radiation in space.
Yeah, that sounds good.
What?
No. Sorry, I was just thinking of fun facts about radiation.
Okay. Well, it's not a fun fact, it's just like a fact. Guess who the only people are that receive more radiation than astronauts?
Cancer patients?
Smokers.
Oh?
Smokers receive over twice the amount of radiation in a year than astronauts do.
This podcast was made possible by Indeed. Indeed is the internet's leading provider of all your hiring needs. Now, sometimes you have people who work for you, which you just really want to fire, but you just can't because you can't find a replacement. Now, Indeed, people looking for jobs can upload their resume, and Indeed will actually scan through various resumes to find you the most valuable candidates. Now, for example, if you have an audio technician named Micah Weiss who decides to flatulate during your ad reads, you can fire him and find someone else within a matter of days. Most users report that they can find a new candidate within 1 to 3 business days. By the way, use code word Elon at checkout for a guaranteed internship at SpaceX.
So that's Apollo 13.
Apollo 14.
Basically not.
Hey, that's not true.
They play golf.
Oh, the story behind that's pretty interesting, actually.
How
like,
snuck
the
it
PR
on.
Dilemma. Well, everyone's like, we've been there, done that, moon ain't so hot anymore, especially after Apollo 13. So they're like, dude, we'll put, like, the worst sport ever on the moon.
Man. It could have been worse, could have been curling.
That's true. If they did moon baseball, I think that could have been a lot more successful. But
it'd be
they...
too easy to hit dinger though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, 1/6 gravity. Like this guy hit a like the suit is super restricted too, so you don't have like full range of movement. But he claims that it just like went for miles like past the horizon because it's like 1/6 gravity, so you hit a golf ball and away it goes.
Another thing, too, is we found something very cool geologically on this trip. It's Big Bertha. Now, Big Bertha was a football-sized lunar rock that was picked up by Alan Shepard. And upon analysis, it's not a moon rock. It's an earth rock. That's right.
Confirmed.
The reason why we know this is because it's a piece of granite, which is super uncommon to see on the moon. It's not impossible to see it. It actually had quartz inside of it, which is super irregular. But analysis, when you're trying to find the age of it, because they thought it was one of the first rocks of the moon, turns out that's wrong. It's because of the zircon analysis in it. Zircon's a mineral that's preserved for a very long amount of time. It doesn't decay very fast. It's a very long half-life. Zircon's used to identify a lot of our really old rocks on the planet, like the Acastan gneiss. But, it's older than any rock we have on the Earth, but it matches mineralogically what our rocks on the Earth are like. So, it turns out that is a rock that, my guess there would be that it stayed in orbit until after the moon formed and then crashed into it.
So, another interesting thing, one of the astronauts was super into forestry, so he took a bunch of seeds to the moon, and then he brought the seeds back with him, and then they were, like, sold off afterwards, just because they were, like, these commemorative seeds. This is a meme that you might like. There is one of the seeds that was brought to and from the moon was planted at the Space Sciences Building at the University of Arizona, and it's now a sycamore tree hanging out there.
So. Okay, so I think that's all we have for today.
That's all we have.
This is Rocket Science is the Columbia Space Initiative podcast, produced by Henry Minelski and David Tibbetts. Executive producers Natasha Dada and Luke DeCruz. PR director Anthony Edessa. Consultant Logan. Audio is mixed by Micah Weiss. Edited by... I'm doing a read here, Micah. Edited by Kate Steiner. That's all, folks.